from America. This is the Adult Swim Podcast, Rick and Morty Companion Edition. Live. Why am I yelling?
Live.
I don't know. I'm Matt Harrigan. With me, Maxime Simonet. That's you.
Yep, here again.
We're talking about Rick and Morty 408, the Vat of Acid episode. If you haven't watched it yet, have you watched it, Max?
Yeah, I have. And if you haven't watched it, you're probably living in a vat of acid.
You might want to watch it first. We're going to get some spoilers from the folks who made this episode. Lauren Bremner is a Rick and Morty background designer. Jacob Hare directed it. James McDermott is the Rick and Morty art director. And Jeff Loveness wrote it. They're all here now. Call and ask your questions. 708-794-6386. Lots of complaints about dumb questions in previous Rick and Morty companion podcast lives.
From us?
So, no, we ask great questions. The callers have not been great questions.
Sometimes it's a little moment of levity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, just goofing off.
People get nervous.
People get nervous. Everyone who thinks they've got a better question might be the one who is a dumb question,
yeah,
is the thing.
Here we go. I read a bunch of reviews. All, you know, Reddit lights up after all these. Was this almost a bottle episode? And did it start out that way? And did it? Maybe you want to explain what a bottle episode is? I don't know. Jeff, what do you think?
I think any bottle episode is like that fly episode of Breaking Bad. It's usually like a contained environment, usually like for production reasons, right? Like they run out of money, so they have to just shoot an episode inside of a, you know, the bar or whatever. But it's also like a creative challenge to like put yourself in a very confined location for the episode. It didn't really start as a bottle episode. If you watch the behind the scenes on the YouTube too, like I think it just came from us. I had just seen RoboCop, in which a vat of acid just floods onto a guy in a truck. And like I am always talking about Batman. The whole room just got talking about vats of acid and like how openly dangerous it is in Gotham City. And like, just, you know, everyone's always falling in. And then we just, I forget where it started, but just like the idea that Rick would have a go-to vat of acid just in case he has to fake his own death. He has to do the most cinematic way just to get off of people. But then like, I think it came from, I forget where, it just like, we just realized like, how long is the Joker down there? Like, did no one get him out? what if someone stuck around? Like if Batman, yeah, like how long did Batman stick around after he kicks the Joker in, like to make sure that he didn't get him out of there? I don't know. And it just became this, it's just a joy. It's like we broke the whole thing in a day. Maybe you can tell, maybe you can't. I don't know. That's part of like the magic of it. And then it became an episode about Rick and Morty, and it is obviously dovetails from there, but it's about like, what is a stupid idea and what is a genius idea that just needs execution? We just want to make a fun bottle episode that then became about something very real. It's like a sneak attack.
Your co-writer, Albro Lundy.
Yeah. That guy is fantastic. He was the writer's assistant. I've never seen a guy who knows the blood of the show so well. He really is like the heart of the show. As a writer's assistant, and then he graduated up. He wrote so well. I mean, this episode, he and Jacob, like, I think are the MVPs. The whole art team, like, he did a great job, and he's got really good episodes coming up too.
He said in that short that, like, what you just said, you broke this story in a day, one day.
Yeah, I think there was an episode that died, or there's this fabled lost episode. I don't know if we talk about it, but like, yeah, we had an open slot basically, and we had to. And we just challenged ourselves to come up with a stupid idea. And then it was something we had to kind of do fast, because maybe I'm all wrong on my production side of things, but like we just needed a fast script to kind of slot in there. And so I had written a couple. And so I kind of knew how to, you know, I knew how to like land the plane and get a shootable script out the door. And Albro was looking for his first script and he was so instrumental. So like we kind of just teamed up, and then Harmon went to town on it. And Jacob and the art team added that incredible sequence with the plane. This is just like a joy. It was a really like the most collaborative episode and the most seamless episode too.
Well, Jacob and the art team are here. Was it a joy for you guys, or was it a terrible nightmare?
We were talking beforehand, and I was saying that actually this episode was, for me, as far as storyboard and stuff, one of the breeziest, and I wouldn't say easy. They're all challenging, but it underwent probably the least rewrites of an episode that I worked on. It just sort of breezed through production for me. And I think the same is true for the designers. You guys were saying that it was similar on your end.
Yeah, no, that was one of the breezier episodes, I think, to get through. But
was Johnny Carson a zombie at one point? Like, was that in the design? he had to like de-zombie him, right?
I think we had a way worse version of him.
Yeah, his like flesh is falling off.
Yeah, like so I think we kind of pulled back to actually like more realistic Johnny Carson, but still a little more zombie. Like,
so all of our 12-year-old fans would go nuts for Johnny Carson impression. Yeah.
The silliness of the acid vat location too. We were told in the launch, make it not like nonsense. There's a scaffold over acid vats for no reason. That environment has no function other than people would probably fall into vats of acid.
So throughout the process, it was an easy episode. Is that what everyone's saying in a way?
It went easy in quotes.
In quotes, compared
easy
to normal,
for us. Easy to watch.
At least on the writing side, it was like the most joyful. We all knew this was like a very stupid premise and a very pretty sinister outcome as well, with a little bit of like a redeeming more. But like we just realized, like we have to really lean into this and really just like let those sequences breathe and slow it down when we have to. And then we were still like 5 minutes short, right? That's where the plane sequence came in.
Yeah, because that was all boarded by, I mean, Jacob, didn't you have to come up with like a lot of what that whole sequence, all that content or?
Yeah.
Was that not in the script?
No.
I think Albro would you. This is you guys. I can't take any, I wish I could take credit for that plane sequence that you guys.
At the board launch, we knew that the show was going to be short, and sometimes the montages and Rick and Morty things will sort of be scripted as, here are a few ideas to get the ball rolling, but you artists go, it'll literally say in the script, artists go nuts. And just in playing with what this device can do or even testing it, we were like, could there be moments where he doesn't use the device for a really long time? And I had said that to Albro in the board launch, and he said, yeah, we actually had a similar idea in the writer's room that there could almost be like a mini Pixar short during this this montage. So just derailing it into a relationship seemed to make the most sense, and just zigging and zagging and seeing where we could go. I was watching AMC's The Terror at the time, and it was reminding me of the movie Alive, the book and the movie Alive that I had not revisited since like middle school. But it seemed to organically flow. Everything about this episode just flowed. It seemed like it just sort of like zipped down the line.
Yeah, that definitely makes the background design process a lot easier, is when you have something to reference. I think with this show, there are no easy episodes, but the saving grace is like, if it's an Earthbound location, you can actually like, what does this plane look like? You know, what does the Alive set look like? And that helps so much, as opposed to like having to invent a world or whatever.
Lauren, what does that mean? Do you go through Pinterest? How do you find these references?
Well, I mean, if we're referencing something specific, obviously I want to look at that, but not go exactly what I'm seeing, just because we're trying to invent a specific location for our story moment. But reference is a huge part of my daily workflow. Huge, huge part.
Pinterest, Matt, what?
I mean, Pinterest is good.
Pinterest is good, Max. I love Pinterest. In the last batch of podcasts, some of the artists referenced Pinterest as sources of interest. Yeah. Pinterest, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we ended up like looking up like what was the actual real plane from, you know, the actual real Alive story. And trying to like make sure that plane kind of looked, you know, pretty spot on to that.
Is that the one with the soccer team? Wait, what's the plot of that? Okay, I saw that. I was hiking. I was doing this Nepal trek, and that was playing at the airport of the most dangerous airport, I think, in the world. It's called like Lukla in Nepal. Like, it's on a cliff, and they were playing that movie.
Terrible choice.
Yeah, I mean, they had to do it by choice. Like, I will never forget seeing these planes just dive off of a cliff. And there's just like this, it's like, oh, that's going to be a 50-50 chance. It'll be me.
That's hilarious.
Probably the quietest sequence, right? Maybe since the Snakes episode.
Yeah. We did this one right on the tail of Snake. So I think that some of the sort of like being in the groove of pantomiming stuff rather than having dialogue driven stuff was still going. So, yeah. And the entire, montage kind of, Dan and Justin made a few tweaks to it at the end, but for the most part, I think it stayed pretty similar to the first board pass that we did. So
big, Ryan Elder showcase.
Yeah, he did an amazing job.
The man.
Incredible.
You guys tell a lot of story with no words in that. How long is that sequence? Did that end up being?
I think it's close to 4 minutes. I was thrilled that they cleared the, it's Elton John song, correct? The way that it's you use it.
No, the Eric Clapton.
Eric Clapton, yes, sorry. Yeah. And then I had pulled a bunch of just temp audio of and thrown it into the animatic of like, you know, here's the moment where it gets kind of sad, or here's where he's finding his strength, and tried to find score that kind of demonstrated that. But then Ryan had the task of actually going through and composing something that would carry that whole sequence. And I really think those jokes live or die by the mood of that music in that sequence. So it's fantastic.
Elder, like season four, I mean, he's really like gone above and beyond. His score work is incredible.
We got a caller right now who's been on the line for 10 minutes in 2-1, go. You've been on for 10 minutes.
Woo! Patience is a virtue. It was a great episode, you guys. I just have one question. When y'all figured out that you were going to do this video game save spot for Morty, and it, it's really close to time travel, Rick even says, right. How did you come up with the consequences for that? You know, even after Morty learns his lesson.
Do you mean the consequences, like all the people showing up, or do you mean the consequence that Morty murdered everybody accidentally?
Oh, the murder. I mean the murder.
I think it was like, I think that I'm going to give this to Albro. I know we talked about it a lot, and we talked about like, obviously like Scott Tenorman is a big, like if you're going to do like a revenge story in an animated show, you gotta, you know, you gotta meet at the plane of Scott Tenorman or try to top it. I think there's this old Persian story, like mythology about like a guy feeding someone to his family, you know, just a very, like there's, we just wanted to really show Rick as just like, if to go to the absolute limit of his pettiness. And this seemed, we just had to go multiversal with it. We hadn't done a ton of multiversal stuff, so we thought we had earned it a little bit. And just, I know that we love, you know, Order 66 from episode 3. We love epic Dune stuff. We love Fantastic Four, any like branching timeline destruction. I don't know. We just tried to one up. And I'm going to give this to Albro, though. I think he wanted to prestige it, and he had the final idea on it.
What kind of analysis do you guys go through to make sure everything connects? Are you afraid of holes? Are you afraid to look at Reddit?
I look at it all. I got to get better at that. Like, especially for like such a popular show, because it's like Star Wars or Marvel or any, you know, you're just going to find literally every opinion. But like, I don't know, people seem to dig it, and they like the stupidity of it, and like the commitment to the bit. I try to like, yeah, I guess I read stuff, but I just like to see what people think.
We kept, like, there was a lot of confusion down the line exactly as to how to treat the device, the reset device, because it, you keep getting tripped up and convincing yourself that he is actually resetting, and you have to make sure that you keep in mind that he's hopping multiverses. So keeping that together was something that I really tried to get way out ahead of before we board launched, and create some guides and rules for the board artists so that we didn't go somewhere that sort of like violated what was actually going on in the story. There's also some discussion about should we show Morty getting gored when he's doing his montage? And we went back and forth on that. Like, is there a property of the device that sort of heals him when he jumps to the next multiverse and stuff? So we played around with that too. In some scenes, we tried not to show him getting gored. In others, I think the gorilla scene has some blood spraying over the railing. But it was a lot of fun just trying to play with it, but also not like violate any rule of what's going on.
How did you make the rules of it apparent visually? What were the little guidelines you had?
I tried to map out, like, okay, wait, he starts here. I mapped it out with Post-it notes on a giant sheet of paper. I think Albro took a photo of it, actually. But it really was, it was helpful that Albro kind of came in and said, envision kind of like episode one of season two, I believe, the Schrodinger's cat one with the split screens. And now imagine them just sort of hopping from panel to panel. And that's kind of how the device at the end that Rick uses to describe to Morty how this tech works, that he's actually, for every second that Morty exists, essentially, there's another Morty in another universe pressing save at the point where he did, and Rick can shunt him into that universe to create the illusion that he's gone back in time and releases hop multiverses. It's very diabolical and deceptively, I think, complex for an episode that plays so simply and is so easy to understand.
Question from chat from Benjamin Rivera says that the save state device is one of the few gadgets in the show that had further explanation on how it works. How much thought normally goes into tools and weapons and techniques like that in the show that maybe we don't see when it's not even said at all?
Like this one, I mean, this one just looked like a TV remote. And what was hilarious is that we must have designed like 60 different versions that were way more complicated and complex looking. And then everybody just wanted like the simplest kind of device that we could come up with. But for other props and devices and whatnot, you know, there'll be a lot of back and forth and a lot of logic trading in between that finally lands on the right idea that works for everybody.
I sit right next to Brent, who's like our lead prop designer, and he's always talking about just like what's necessary for the moment. And he's a very technical person, so he'll figure out like literally how the thing works. It's not just a drawing for him. So that's definitely like a whole other world of thinking.
I think the Wii remote was kind of the starting point for the device in this episode, if I'm not mistaken. We wanted to find a familiar video game device.
I think what ended up happening, it's like, for some reason, the simplest things though on this show end up being like, like Justin's, like Justin Roiland is like crazy about remotes and like, you know, like video game controls and that kind of thing. So this was like the one thing you really like honed in on and chimed in on over and over again until we like probably went back to the first drawing after like 60 drawings of it. You know, simplicity won out. So
how accurate is the meta science without, you know, the viewer having to go do the research? There's a lot of jibber jabber in there. And how accurate is that?
Oh, none of it. No,
none
no,
of it. No, no. Okay. Thank you.
doesn't happen. I think you just lead from the heart and you try to ground it in, and you guys were so good at crafting a visual narrative to it. But I don't know, I think part of the joy, it's sci-fi. Like I think with sci-fi, you lean with the heart and then you explain it as well as you can. But then at a certain point, you kind of just give the child the world and see if it gets bullied or not. But I would not say I did too much research on this. But we got the basic hook, and then we had to streamline and get the right idea. Like, but I think you just got to follow the comedy, and then you make rules after that.
A lot of chatters seem to be obsessed with trying to find out the name of the woman he's dating in the Pixar short sequence. Was there ever a name given?
I mean, like, I did model the girl after my fiance Carrie, so you could call her Carrie, I guess. The original, I think I did a concept sketch that I handed off to James where I used like a teenage photo of my fiance. I only gave like one photo. It goes through the Rick and Morty filtration process, and I don't think the end result girl necessarily exactly looks like my fiance.
Wow, immortalized.
The likeness, yeah.
That's so cute.
What an honor.
Does it make you even sadder to see that there's the possibility of a timeline with her that can be destroyed while you wake up somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, in you know, we didn't have time at the end necessarily, but technically, I guess, consequentially, all of the versions of her that pepper sprayed him would have been there too at the end of the acid vat scene. I don't know. It was something that we totally figured out and bored. So lots of that was never given a name or really figured out.
The chat's already been thrown off. Terry Carey or Carrie?
Carrie with a C.
Okay.
So John Kerry.
A lot of references. Lauren, maybe you can speak to this in the background. A lot of people in on the internet talking about all the other shows that are referenced in this particular episode. What can you tell us?
Other shows that are referenced. I mean, I feel like it's a general feeling of like a 90s montage. Like, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know. All I can really speak to is the backgrounds that I did and little Easter eggs and stuff that I put in mine. But as far as the overarching call outs story wise, I don't know. I think that might be a better question for Jeff.
What did you put in?
Well, there was the one scene with where Rick had been working all night and he calls Morty in at 3 a.m. and his garage is like disheveled. And I was able to add some props in there, just stuff that he had been working on. And I definitely pulled some things from my childhood. There's a canister from the Legend of the Ooze Ninja Turtle movie in there. There's a little, there's like a cute little shell phone thing that I modeled after like a Polly Pocket that I had when I was a kid. I think there's like a Powerpuff Girl reference in there, just personal little things that make me happy to see them on screen. But as far as like the big show references, I don't know. I don't really.
Powerpuff, Ninja Turtles. Some people say South Park, Simpsons.
Yeah, I saw Moe in there. Yeah, that's cool.
I mean,
that's right. There was a Moe's background in there. I didn't do that one, but the paint has a lot to do with it too. Like sometimes I'll draw something and they'll paint it differently than how I envision it. So, you know, paint decisions can kind of make or break references too.
Well, what's one of the most shocking moments of that you've seen where some things just come out completely differently with the color? Any episode?
Honestly, like the Glorzo episode was my very first episode, and the way I pictured it when I was drawing was completely different, but I love what they did with it because it's not something I would have ever done. Just that orange, like hazy, dusty kind of it's like a wet dustiness. It didn't make any sense to me, but it looked so beautiful, and I would have definitely gone a completely different direction, but that's why I'm not in the paint department. they make great decisions. So
someone in chat says, I want to hear a wildly inappropriate and distasteful Justin Roiland suggestion that got shot down. Is there any for this episode?
No, there's this old episode I always, he had one about a butcher who was like a butcher who was a private eye and another lost episode. But there was like, I remember we had one whole day trying to make a story about a butcher private eye who passed out leaflets and killed himself. And he had no impact upon the story whatsoever. I don't know. That's the person I think of. But there's always just like side characters, little doodles that are drawn in that we'll never see the light of day. And then it's such a victory. I guess we'll have to come back on next year. I think there's one character that I just can't. He's a little guy and he likes to be chased around. I think you guys will see him one of these days. But when a character comes back that you fought for like 2 years and he makes, I mean, episode one of season five, there's a fan. I'll be back to talk about that next year.
we definitely do get pushed sometimes to places we can't go. You know, like I don't know if it made it into the show, but in the toilet episode this season, we did have a shot of Rick's giant mechanical butthole coming down onto that I think Justin drew on the whiteboard. I don't know if it's in there or not. It may be in the dream sequence somewhere.
I think it got killed.
Did it?
Yeah, we were all bummed.
It killed the butthole. Yeah.
It had fucking lens flares coming off of it and stuff. It was beautiful.
We spent a lot of time on this lens flare.
James, are you the keeper of the references, the Easter eggs? Are you the man who filters them out?
I could knock some of those out for you. Like for the acid vat area, obviously Batman. But like for the alien thugs, we were kind of looking at Dick Tracy and like those kinds of goons and what they look like. For the plane sequence, you know, obviously Alive. We were looking at The Gray, that movie, just really hammering home the desperation and really just making it feel stark and, you know, just bitter, like these guys aren't gonna survive. For the garage sequence, when we were dealing with the multiple Morty the Morty shunting himself and all the times he's basically killed himself. We were kind of looking at like Minority Report and, you know, like Iron Man and the way that he kind of deals with all the holograms. I don't know, there's just a few, but.
What went through Heroin Keith's design? How would Heroin?
That one came in. I didn't particularly care for the way it originally came in, and I kind of sat with the designer and basically went over it for like 45 minutes until we finally like, you know, hit gold there. So as soon as we were done, I was laughing and I was just like, oh my God, please bring this character back.
For some reason, that's like the one pure, I like that Heroin Keith just stands out to me. It's just like, I feel like I got to give that into the episode. Like it bears no importance on the story. I just like Heroin Keith a lot.
No,
you suddenly care about him.
Yeah.
It's a lovable heroin addict.
Yeah.
You can go down the rabbit hole too. I remember I was concerned that if we made the gangsters at the beginning of this episode look too much like slugs or boneless creatures, that it would alter the joke somehow, that they were fascinated by bone science. I don't think it actually mattered, but I remember like taking a bunch of people's time to talk about it, and it ultimately didn't mean anything.
I love those logic traps. We had one, like, I think we talked about how to kill Wolverine in the writer's room like a whole day, and it ended with him like rowing out in a boat and tricking him with a fake boat he could drown. And I just love, yeah, you can debate the globs and the love of bones from glob creatures. It's such a fun show to have debates on.
Love it.
You're on the line with the Rick and Morty Companion Podcast Live. We're talking about the Vat of Acid episode. What's your name, kid?
It's Alicia Weatherholt. I was wondering about how Rick was domineering Morty when he forced him to climb into the pit of acid at the end. I'd like to hear more about that and the decisions around that interaction.
Yeah, I think it was, I wrote that part, like the say the vat is good and kiss the vat and all that. I think that was, we just wanted to really just hit the nadir of Rick's like narcissism. And honestly, like this is a dark episode. We just, and I think we just wanted absolutely break someone. I really love like Machiavellian power plays or any like, any time when the plan finally works and the Count of Monte Cristo finally gets to like say his thing to someone, like I just ate that up. I was telling you guys, I love kissing, I guess. I love like animated kiss downs. And so that in Train has a lot of kissing. I don't know. We just thought it would be like, let's take the stupidest argument ever and turn it into the most draconian, petty, like power move to show that like, oh no, Rick Sanchez is a horrible person and like his downfall can't come soon enough. Fun to write.
Somebody in chat asks, what are some recent sci-fi shows that you guys are into? Are there new tropes being explored that fascinate you that might be used as influences or something like that? Because they felt like the sci-fi landscape has changed in the last few years.
Right. Like, yeah, like it's getting a little old hat to do like, like 2005, 2000s, any 80s. Yeah. You got to like keep it fresh. We mentioned a lot of Alex Garland stuff. We bring up Annihilation a lot. Like the little creepy Annihilation guy. I was going back. I love like Tarkovsky sci-fi. I think that's in the sweet spot right now. I always hit 90s X-Men too, but recent stuff, Black Mirror is good. I don't know. Like, what are you guys liking? I like Ted Chain short stories are really good as a novelist.
I watched Devs. That was an Alex Garland one. Mm. The Devs was pretty cool. There's a lot of multiverse nowadays out there, I feel like. Yeah, I don't know about you guys.
Does Ancient Aliens count? Because that's all I watch. It's the only sci-fi I watch.
Yeah, I've kind of been Black Mirror and trying to think of the last thing I saw. I just watched Enemy the other day. That was kind of a weird movie. I haven't really been watching as much sci-fi lately, but
I like to revisit the classics. There's speaking of Easter eggs, there was one of the board artists, Jason Warnesky, drew when Rick's meddling at his bench, he just drew some sci-fi stuff, and one of the things he picked up looked like a little sphere. And I think I just drew the prongs on the front to make it a Hellraiser ball. It had to be done. And it was like another little Easter egg in the show.
Ant-Man and the Wasp took a little beating in this episode. do those insults? I don't know if they're insults or not. References. Do they come back to haunt you ever? Do you guys ever hear from anybody that you goof on?
I'll let you know. As I in my Ant-Man. No, I think that was just the guy like having fun there. I don't know. I guess I'll see how the Ant-Man stuff goes. I think everyone knows we're joking around and like it's who cares. Have you guys? I've never really gotten into trouble for any references. Have you guys gotten any attacks?
No, I mean my family is a little weird about the Bible stuff, but
mine too. Yeah, yeah.
That's what makes it funny.
Yeah, that's what makes it funny.
So it's all good.
Is there a chance for a bottle episode at this point, or have you nipped that premise in the bud by not doing it this time that it would feel like backing off to do it?
You know, there's always an idea we pitch around. Like there's been, yeah, like there was some Phantom Zone idea thing we never did. But also this show, I mean, you guys, like this show is so visual and so like frantic and kinetic. I almost feel like unless it's just like that, which is such a specialized bottle episode, it's almost a disservice. Like the show is so visual and so it moves so well. Like, I mean, do you want to watch a bottle episode of just,
well,
like I think production does.
Well, yeah, we're dying for a bottle episode, but Total Recall, the Parasite episode from season 2 was originally designed to be a bottle episode, but then it blew up into a giant episode that no longer qualified as a bottle episode because of how many characters we had to do and populate every scene with crowds upon crowds. Like we even called it the Where's Waldo shot, where they did like a down shot of the entire living room with 100 character, you know, random characters, you know, looking up at the camera. And that kind of, it was an awesome episode, but it definitely was not an easy bottle episode.
That's
Morty had how many time travel fantasies did he have? A lot.
Yeah, that's becoming a thing too. The panel within a panel premise of Rick and Morty happened in the Schrodinger's cat one. They did it again at the beginning of this season with Death Crystals,
right?
And now we tried to cheat a little bit when we show all the panels at the end by not animating every single one of them, because it adds a great deal of work to have to animate all those little frames within a frame, all those little hologram screens. But then if you only animate some of them, but you leave some of them still, it looks like you made a mistake, like as if you just forgot to animate half of them. So there's sort of like free floating Morty sculptures that are kind of like melting in place that are just figures and not contained within a screen. We're kind of added to make it more of a multimedia exhibit. And I'm not sure about those when animating those little frames within a frame, James, I wanted to ask you, do you guys have to increase the line weight or do something differently from our normal animation or?
Yeah, we have to like decrease the line weight. That's like what we had to do across the board for Crystal, and the same rule applied here, because basically we have to draw it at a certain scale, and then for the final result it would get scaled down, but only a certain line weight would work with that. Like you couldn't go any lower or higher. So so then that it just made it scalable so that it worked properly and everything.
It's a massive montage.
Yeah.
That you have. Are those ideas from everybody?
The script had a bunch of suggestions in there of things he could be doing. And then the board artists are open. They're welcome to pitch ideas. And yeah, it's a big collaboration.
Are they usually pitched in drawing, or do you guys brainstorm a bunch of lists that you give to writers or?
Typically, yeah, I find that stuff like that, you just kind of got to go at it. Go as far as you possibly can and then edit it later if it needs editing. If you try to figure out how many beats you need or anything in advance, you can trip yourself up.
Make it first and then cut it back.
Yeah, it is tough. It's the thing about action or things without dialogue is that they're some of the hardest things to draw, but they are the easiest things to cut if you need time. So in some instances in this, like if we hit a patch where we're waiting on notes or something, we'll say to the board artist, hey, draw a bunch of shots of Morty melting in place in different locations, and the board artist can pitch a bunch of ideas. Or But I actually boarded the montage myself, and there were some decisions too made, like Morty jumping over the manhole cover was because I knew later Rick was going to be demonstrating how this device worked to Morty on a much smaller screen. And I needed a big action, a big repetitive action for Morty to be doing, like doing a skateboard trick or jumping over a manhole so that it would read on the tiny screen when he's demonstrating it later. It couldn't be him throwing a Cheeto puff in the air because that might not read on the smaller screen. So, you know, some of it's logical with what you come up with, but some of it's just having fun and going at it. The whole relationship with the girl was just, let's go too far if you need to, and let's see where it lands. I find that strangely those endurance jokes though, and when people do stuff forward driven, if they just really go at it without overthinking it too much, they land within range of what it needs to be. It seems like there's a, you know, comedically it hits the beats it needs to. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Harmon added the flashback within the flashback where he's looking at the girlfriend and starts flashing back to earlier in that exact montage. And the gorilla pit scene was their addition too. I think I had Morty go into the porno theater at the end and sit down on the device. And it was way more apathetic and less consequential. But Jeff, I don't know if you have anything about montages when you guys are doing them in the writer's room.
Mainly heroin Keith forward was kind of my, I think I pitched like a mucus orgy. It was like a big alien orgy thing going on. And heroin Keith. Yeah, I think you're just trying to hit a lot. Oh, Suicide by Cop. I remember that. Yeah, I think you're just trying to hit a spread, and like you're just going for emotion of like, okay, if you're, you know, a 14-year-old boy, what are the couple of things you would do? Oh, you'd feel bad about that. Morty's a good kid. Like you kind of try to track the emotion, but show him slowly losing himself. And I really love that pornography theater shot that you did. It was so bleak, and like I missed that. That was a man at rock bottom. Like a 14-year-old. Where does a 14-year-old boy have the wherewithal to go into like a 1970s porn theater? Like he has no nostalgia. He has no, like, that's just a bleak choice. Like that's a sad thing to do.
I think it was a S&P note too, with the orgy is in there to a degree. Yeah. It's much more abstract. We had drawn it so horrifying and so pornographic that it got pulled back.
Yeah, S&P had a whole bunch of notes about what we could do, what we couldn't do there. And
What couldn't you do?
There was a lot of in and out. There's a lot of gyrations, a lot of all that. So we had to sort of figure out a way to get the same idea across without being as graphic.
Originally, that 4 minutes was going to be all the orgy scene instead of the plane.
No.
How much did it get animated? How graphic did it get?
It's still pretty suggestive. It's definitely tamer than what the original was. But
oh yeah, hip thrusting and butt cheeks clapping and stuff. They're never gonna fly.
The chat says release the porn theater cut.
Yeah, are we ever allowed to bring cut elements to the podcast, Matt, or is that defeat the purpose of?
I don't know. We'll ask these guys. That's a quiet no.
I would if I had it on me, but
I'll spoil whatever.
Someone in chat mentioned, was there always the plan that Jerry would be the reason Morty's experience ends? Like in this one, he grabs the remote and hits it, and then his whole experience with this woman's gone. Was that always the plan? Or was the original reason Morty's done with it and upset with it?
I think originally I had him try to press the button at the plane crash and his finger was peeling off on the device. Mm-hmm. I think Dan suggested the 911 call, which worked great. And I think it was always Jerry in the living room, but clarifying that he mistook it for the remote control didn't come through. I think we played it in the wide shot and nobody caught that Jerry had done it. It just suddenly reversed. So there was some tweaking to that scene, but I think it was always Jerry.
Fucking Jerry.
Question in the chat. Are there discrepancies between writers on certain references? One group too young to catch certain pop culture references that the other half reveres.
Oh yeah. That's always, I mean that, if you're a young guy or an old guy in a writer's room, it is weird.
Jeffrey Dahmer maybe.
Yeah. Well, I think people,
Dahmer, I don't know. Is that an old reference or a young reference? I guess that's maybe what this guy's asking.
I feel he's one of the greats. I feel he's, you know, he's in the, I feel Dahmer kind of made it to the Hall of Fame of serial killers. I think he's timeless. I don't know. Yeah, it's, I think as someone, I'm 30, so I'm like riding the line between irrelevancy and all that. Like, I think there's something funny about outdated references, and especially like, I mean, we've done, we had Michael Dukakis in an episode that just made no sense. We had Johnny Carson. I sort of enjoy, because all of humor is just reference-based now, especially a lot of animated humor. And like, I think like if you can just throw a left ball or a left ball, if you can just throw a little curve in there, like the Johnny Carson thing makes no sense, which is why it's kind of just a delight. Like I, Sonia Sotomayor, like, I don't know. I like, if you're going to reference something, just like make a bad reference. And I think that's almost a fresher choice than, I don't know.
Herbal. Well, the bad reference that we, inclusive. The yeah. bad reference that we looked at for that scene with the, when Rick opens the garage door and there's the whole SWAT team. We just referenced the TV show Cops.
Yeah. But all I do is just, I just reference 90s X-Men and I try to dress it up in different, I got to get a new reference pool.
Jeff, did that Ant-Man and the Wasp joke go in before or after you were involved with Untitled Ant-Man and the Wasp sequel?
I know we had, think it was in there. I don't know. But also, like, I know I left, I think it was like an extra, we were doing, I left to go pitch on Ant-Man and we were doing a quick little like color rewrite or something. And that might have, I know I had to leave early and I was like, I got to go to Ant-Man of the White. So it's, I think that might've been I think we were watching Ant-Man one day. We watched the thing. I don't know. I think there was a version of it in there, but I think it crystallized or something maybe near the end. But there is actually like an Easter egg in there. You'll see when Ant-Man 3 comes out. I've got something planned. Rick adjacent thing. I've got plans, man.
People are talking about Morty and his evolution in this season and his confidence. And people want to know if it's going to stick.
I think it kind of, you want to push him a little bit, but that's the rule of TV. It's like you push a character, but then they always have kind of a sweet spot they return to. But yeah, I really like, I especially like when Rick and Morty get along. I think it's actually like, it's more surprising. I love the Glorzo conversation they have. I love Rick like asking Morty to kiss him in the Christmas or the story train thing. I don't know. I think we're growing Morty, especially next season too. Like he's really seeing some stuff now and he knows how to handle the world, but he's been increasingly jaded and you're going to see it really start to bite him. But I don't know. I think it's good to keep it a little fresh. And I like actually leaning into like the positivity between them because you just don't expect that. Like in that simulation episode when they just start playing with the crystals and they do the horseplay out of nowhere. Like it's that's like, I'm sure like when the show first came out, wasn't that one of the first like jokes when you're just like, what the hell is this? And like, what is this show? Like I love like those unexpected turns. But yeah, Morty's changing. Morty's becoming a young man.
You're on the line with the Rick and Morty Companion Podcast Live. We're talking about the Vat of Acid episode. What's going on, caller on the phone?
Hello.
Hello.
So, I love the episode. It's pretty good. I'd like to talk about, like, so I thought, like, overlapping saves, maybe. So, was that ever thought about or elaborated or anything?
Overlapping saves, like saving multiple times and
yeah.
I think we wanted to keep it kind of simple, but that's a very good plan. That actually would have been a smarter way to do it. But I think we just kept it simple, like old Tony Hawk games when you would just go back and redo it.
Yeah. Like when he presses the button in the beginning, could he do that twice?
Maybe. I guess Morty was too nervous. He was just doing it once. But yeah, I think you could probably do it twice, but it would eventually catch up to you. That just means you're killing two people.
Albro fan. Oh, is that Albro or just an Albro fan in chat says
that's Albro. Come on,
Jacob. What's the hardest episode you've had to direct at Rick and Morty? If it's one we haven't seen yet, can you describe why in the most vague way possible? I'm going to add.
Yeah, it's currently happening, I think. And typically, with Rick and Morty, there is an improvisational nature to this show where you you know, it's you do explore some things. You do have to draw some extra stuff that doesn't always make it, you know. And typically, I think that's usually where it gets the hardest, is when we go really, really, really far into that. You know, sometimes even season 4, we've had animatics that run. I think toilet episode, the first pass I did was 26 minutes long or something like that. They air at 22 minutes. So that's almost like drawing an additional act. And television production, no matter where you go, has a one size fits all attitude to schedule. It's sort of like if you get an episode that's just Rick and Morty sitting in a vat of acid, barely doing anything, you have 2.5 weeks to draw the thumbnail. If you get Glorzo episode and there's an entire city being destroyed, you have 2.5 weeks to do the thumbnail. There's no, it's just a sort of, and there is help. It's not cruel and unforgiving. We get extra artists. Sometimes we can get extra time if it works out schedule wise. But Rick and Morty overall is a very challenging show. Even this one we were saying is one of the easier episodes that I've done, but it's still tremendously challenging compared to a lot of other TV shows in general. But I think probably season premieres and finales get a lot of attention. Is that true, Jeff? Would you say that, like those episodes?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, there wasn't, I mean, 501, I don't know if we even knew that was going to be the opener or not, but 510 for sure has a lot of like weight to it. 410, I know they worked a lot on that. They rebroke that a lot, I know. Yeah, I think, but especially season 4, we almost had no continuity rules. Like we knew like, okay, we're going to be doing this. Like we got to shake up the show. Let's really stretch the narrative. Let's really stretch the experimentation. Let's not fall back on anything. So like no cable, no, you know, like, so I think we just wanted to stretch in that direction, but there was never really like an overarching, like, okay, this is going to be the big finale or this is the opener. We just kind of wanted to just run and see what we could come up with.
And extending that question to James and Lauren, is there a hard, fast rule on design that makes, or were any of these episodes the absolute hardest, or?
Glorzo was just.
I'm so sorry.
that one killed us. But artistically, when I watch it, I'm like, holy crap, it looks amazing.
Yeah. It's incredible.
I'm so proud of it.
Yeah, yeah. I was really excited to see that one. I'm trying to think. Crystal was tough just because you had to create all the extra deaths, you know, on top of a regular load, you know, doing the art for the show, but then having to go back and make 120 deaths that they only used 40 of, you know, and you're like, damn it. So just a lot of extra legwork on stuff like that, like you were saying, when you're seeing a frame within a frame, having to animate, you know, definitely creates a whole other workload that, you know, you're not expecting. But
we try, when we tell the board artists to run with that stuff and draw a bunch of Morty's dying, we're always like, do it in the kitchen or do it somewhere that we already have the backgrounds and everything. We reuse as much as possible.
Right.
Yeah, Glorzo was difficult just because it was my first one and I was scared shitless. So I was just like trying to keep up with all the badassery that was around me. And but as far as man hours and like wrecking my brain on how to approach a certain shot, I think next week's episode is my most difficult. There's just a lot of tech going on. So
what's scary about
that's it? That's not is really it, how my brain.
Is it that you feel pressure to deliver a volume of stuff or the quality? Like what's stressful?
It's the world building.
I think, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you're surrounded by different people who have different like expertise. So there's people who are incredibly gifted at doing machinery and weapons and things like that. I tend to gravitate more towards like emotional content or more like pretty drawings. So if there's something that's really like harsh and mechanical, I have to use a different part of my brain that's not natural. That's what makes our team so cool, is like everyone has these like different, you know, strengths. So
your crew over delivers, guys, wouldn't you say? Where are all these outtakes? How do we see them? Guys, we're always cutting stuff. Show it to us.
We've always joked about putting together an episode of all the unsung hero art that is laying on the cutting room floor. I think that could be an interesting episode.
It is. yeah, that is the kind of maybe the most fun part of the job. Just like being doing these shows, it's like, oh yeah, you just remember weeks and weeks of like, no one's ever going to see a character called Cool Horse that I tried so hard to get in there. I'm never going to see. A couple of them, you count your victories, but yeah, there's just so many. And then like, you guys drew Crossy and Bivalosaurus. Oh my God, that was a special train episode. I think that sticks with me the most. When you finally get to see all the work that goes into it, it's like, oh yeah, I remember old Bivalosaurus. Remember that guy?
Yeah, so much time goes by from like when you work on it to when it leaves your desk and when it goes on TV and you're seeing it for the first time as somebody who worked on it. It's very strange and surreal. You almost don't remember what you did because it's so long ago.
All right, guys, what can we look forward to in 409? Coming up in just under a week. What can you tell us?
Ooh, there's a lot of Jerry action.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've been looking for Jerry, James Siciliano is like the Jerry whisperer. He wrote a good Jerry. directed this one? Is this?
Kyung-hee.
Kyung-hee did this one, yeah.
Great. It's big. It's massive. It's like world building. It's a family episode. It's a family episode. Mm-hmm. It's like, but if you want more like of a family storylines, the next two episodes are very heavy with like Jerry and Beth and the family dynamic and all that. So yeah, like season four was so much fun of just all these experiments. And then we kind of bring it back to a bit of a family story with the next two. But it's great.
Rick and Morty 408, the Vat of Acid episode. Thank you to Lauren. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you, James. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
Everybody says it's the best episode yet, and they say it every week.
Guys, thanks for having us on.
Join us live next Monday at 10 p.m. Eastern on AdultSwim.com or the Adult Swim app and ask your questions. Subscribe to the Adult Swim Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. As always, we'd love to hear from you. AdultSwimPodcast@gmail.com. And thank you to Christina Loringer for producing this episode. Special thanks to Steve Levy for organizing all of this. Thanks to you, the listener, for listening. Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Max.